if you don't know me, that's kind of a problem because a big part of my job is getting to know people at this church. My name is Simon Baumgartel, and I do the youth ministry here at the church. So I thought it would be fun to talk about youth ministry today. So we are going to go over youth ministry, and I know a lot of you guys are going to be like, okay, great, I can check out now. Like, I have nothing to do with youth ministry. I don't care about youth ministry. That is someone else's job, which I would very much encourage you, please don't check out. Please check in, and please listen, because youth ministry has so much more than just being somewhere on a Wednesday night, or doing a big party, or throwing dodgeballs at each other. There is so much more to youth ministry than that. And I really hope that by the end of this, you see that everybody in this church has a part to play in youth ministry. And youth ministry, like as some of you guys can probably imagine, is not always dodgeball. It's not always a lot of fun. There's some times that, you know, you go on a trip with a bunch of high schoolers and you don't want to bring any of them back. Oftentimes that can happen. I remember a couple years ago, one of the first trips I was leading with the youth group, we go to this thing called TCTC. It's in Gatlinburg, and we go over January because we like risking snowstorms and blizzards and stuff. And so we're there at the hotel room, and our hotel room is pretty warm. So some of the guys and I are sleeping out in the living room. There's another group sleeping in the bedroom. In the group out in the living room, we have like this little tiny blanket like that, like three of us are like sharing because we're like, okay, whatever, this isn't a big deal. It's so warm in here. And the group in the bedroom has like all the like master sheets and like the big old bulky blankets and stuff. And I'm like, okay, they're going to die of heat in there. Well, over the night, I wake up the coldest I've probably ever been. And there's a blizzard going on outside. It is like bad snowstorm. We didn't get to go to the convention the next morning because of how much it snowed. And so I'm like freezing. I'm like, what the heck is going on here? Did the heat break inside the hotel? Like the other guys are waking up freezing. I'm like, okay, have the blanket, whatever. I'm bundling up. It's like 4 a.m. I don't get any more sleep the rest of the night. It is so cold. I come to realize in the morning that the group in the bedroom thought it was too warm in their room, so they couldn't use their blankets. So they left the balcony open. I don't know why I brought them back. I really don't. I thought that was completely justified to throw them out of the hotel room and be like, okay, go find somewhere else to stay over the weekend. Sometimes there's a lot of frustration with youth ministry. Sometimes there's a lot of times when you just want to hug them around the neck. But it's also a very rewarding job most of the time. And so let's talk about what is youth ministry, because I think a lot of us have a strange idea about what youth ministry actually is. And I want to tell you, it's not, you know, like teaching kids to be good, right? It's not just come here and, you know, we're going to teach you all these like good things to be. Like that's a good goal to strive for, but that's not what youth ministry is. Youth ministry is not, you know, abstinence training. It's not making sure that kids stay sober or off drugs or keeping kids out of jail. Like, don't hear what I'm not saying. Those are good things. Those are great things to strive for, but that is not the goal of ministry. That's not the goal of youth ministry. My goal in youth ministry is based off of the Great Commission. My goal in youth ministry is to share Jesus with the next generation in such a way that they desire to share Jesus with the next generation. That is what I believe the goal of all ministry should be, is sharing Jesus with people in such a way that they desire to share Jesus with people, right? And so if a kid, you know, is in high school and has a child already and doesn't graduate and ends up in jail, don't hear what I'm not saying. That's not a good thing, but that's not necessarily how I'm going to mark my failures. In the same way, if a kid graduates high school and, you know, out of youth group, attends church regularly and never touches a drop of alcohol and, waits till marriage, whatever it is, like, that's great. That's not how I mark my success, though. Like in youth ministry, that's not how I'm going to mark my failure or success. Those are things you can strive for, but I'm always going to mark my failures and success on which students are striving to share their faith. Which students have fallen so in love with Jesus that they don't want to hold that in anymore, that they want to go out into the world, they want to be in the schools sharing their faith. And whenever I see that in a student, that is what excites me. That is what makes a job worth it. That's what makes freezing in the middle of the night in Tennessee all worth it, is because I see life change going on that is going to create life change later. Right? Creating disciples that make disciples that make disciples. That is one of the main goals of youth ministry. Obviously, the main goal is to create disciples that have a relationship with God. But one of the main goals for me is creating disciples that want to create disciples. So that is what youth ministry here at LCC is. Why is youth ministry important? It's kind of the next question. Right? Like, okay, that's what it is, but why do we spend time on this? Why do we spend resources on this? Why am I here, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 nights a week doing this? Is this even important? And I would say the first reason why youth ministry is important is because it starts good habits. Right? Like Proverbs 22:6 tells us that start children off on the way they should go, and even when they are old, they will not turn from it. Most psychological studies will tell you starting off habits with kids when they're young are going to lead to good habits later on in their life, right? In youth ministry, that's when we can establish, like, when they're reading their Bible and praying. That it's going to be much harder for them when they're in college or in the work field to start establishing a habit like that. It's going to establish going to church regularly on a Sunday. That's going to establish serving other people. That's going to establish a desire to share their faith. Honestly, when a kid is plugged into a good youth ministry, that could determine if they have a positive or negative friend group, what kind of influences they have. That could very well determine the kind of person that they seek as a marriage partner. That could even determine what career choice they have if they are plugged into youth ministry early, if they are creating those habits, creating that lifestyle choice early on. So I believe that youth ministry is so important because it starts changing students' lives before it's hard to change their lives, right? When you're in college, when you're in the work field, whenever you've been married, it's going to be much harder to do that 180 on your life. So it starts good habits early. The second thing is it assists broken families in ministry. I think this is one of the most important things I do, is helping out with broken families. What I mean by that isn't that the family is dysfunctional. It's just it's not the nuclear family or whatever it is. It's not the two parents and raising their kids. And I did some research on this, and I don't often do research for my sermons, so this was fun to do. But I saw that as of 2014 in Pew Research, 46% of kids are living with their parents in their first marriage. So 46% of kids, less than half of kids, are living with their two biological parents or two parents that adopted them that are in their first marriage. 15% are living with their parents in remarriage. So they're living with step-parents. They're living, and that's great. It's good that they have those in their life, but you could also have a situation there where they have two Christian parents or two non-Christian parents there. And they don't have the consistency. That's going to be every other weekend. 26% of kids, over a quarter of kids today, and this is in 2014, so these numbers are probably higher now, live with a single parent. They only have a mom or a dad, which we understand that there are so many things a father can offer that a mother can't offer. There's so many things a mom can offer that a father can't offer. And then 5% as of 2014 aren't living with their parents. Either they're an orphan or they're living with a friend or a grandparent, whatever it is. And you might say, well, those are weird numbers, but what does that mean for us? Well, in James 1:27, it tells us that religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. This is saying that one-third of your religion isn't church attendance, it isn't Bible study, isn't Sunday school, it isn't memorization. One-third of it should be focused on helping out kids in those broken families. Should be focused on kids that are going to have a harder time growing up in their faith. Most Christians are going to come from two Christian parents in their biological home. It's a much harder journey, not an impossible journey. God, the best thing he does is redeem broken things. But it's not an impossible journey for someone to come out of these broken families as a Christian. I'm sure so many of you guys have that testimony. But it's a harder journey for them. And they're going to need more help. And youth ministry is so crucial to that. Most of the time when I'm doing youth ministry, I'm dealing with a kid that comes out of that 54%. Less time I'm dealing with the kids that are coming out of the two Christian parent household. So it assists broken families in their ministry. The final reason why it's, not the final reason, there's so many reasons why it's important, but, you know, we work in threes as pastors, so whatever. The final reason is long-lasting relationships, right? It gives important relationships early. It might be with a youth leader or a youth volunteer or with another friend inside of the youth program, but that so many times in the youth group that I have kids that go from the middle school program to the high school program to just like being really good friends of mine. It's no longer becomes like a peer-student relationship. It becomes, hey, do you want to hang out this week? Do you want to get together? Do you want to do a Bible study together? And it's not just me teaching them. It's us learning from each other. And I have so many relationships with students that are well removed from the youth program that still text me, still call me, and we still hang out. Even if they don't go to church here or go to church anywhere, I still have that relationship with them because of that. And oftentimes, I'm the only Christian they'll see throughout the week. And that's what's so important about youth ministry is you have those relationships that get built in early. So, that is what youth ministry is, why it's important. So, now the question is, who should do youth ministry? Who should be the people doing youth ministries? Is it the youth ministers? Is it the pastor? Is it the volunteers? Well, the first person that I'll tell you who should do youth ministry is the parents. I think, here's the thing. On a good week, let's say the best of numbers, I might get 5 hours with any given kid in the youth group. 5 hours throughout the week. Maybe. That's highballing it. The parents are going to get so much more time throughout the week than I will ever get. They have so much more influence than I will ever have. Deuteronomy 6, verses 20 through 25, and this was given to me last night. It says, in the future, when your son asks you, what is the meaning of the stipulations, decrees, and laws that the Lord our God has commanded you? Tell him, we were slaves of Pharaoh in Egypt, but the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. Before our eyes, the Lord sent signs and wonders, great and terrible, on Egypt and Pharaoh and his whole household. But he brought us out from there to bring us in and give us the land he promised on oath to our ancestors. The Lord commanded us to obey all these decrees and to fear the Lord our God so that we might always prosper and be kept alive as in the case today. And if we are careful to obey all this law before the Lord our God, and as he has commanded us, that will be our righteousness. I think the most important part of this whole passage is verses 20 and 21. In the future, when your son asks you, what is the meaning of the stipulations, decrees, and laws the Lord our God has commanded you? You tell him. Moses isn't saying here, when your children ask you about the Bible, when your children ask you about the scripture, send them to me, or send them to your local priest, or tell them to go back and read it. No, 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 no. Parents, you should be prepared with an answer. You should know the history. You should know the scripture. You are on the forefront of your children's ministry. You are on the forefront of the youth ministry for your kid. You have the nights with them. You have the mornings with them. You should be prepared with the answers for them. You were there whenever they first started. You'll probably be with them much longer than anyone else in their life. I really think that parents have just so much more influence, and maybe you don't realize it, so much more influence than I could ever have. You can establish, hey, no more screens at this time, we're all going to pray and read our Bible right now. You can establish prayer time in the morning. My two biggest youth ministers, listen, growing up, I had a lot of youth ministers and leaders in my life. My two most influential youth ministers were my parents. Hands down, bar none, because they were consistent. They were always there. They were the ones that made sure I was reading my Bible. They were the ones that made sure I was going to church. They could do that. They were the ones driving me there. I've tried to drive students to church in the morning. They hate it. They do not get out of their beds. Okay, parents have that kind of influence. You guys can prioritize church. You guys can stop grounding your kids from youth group. All right. So, Another stat that's just shocking, and I won't stay here very long, but another stat that's just shocking is that whenever the mother is the first one to find Christ, whenever the mom is the first one to go to church in the family, 17% of the time the rest of the household will follow, which is great. But this, it's astronomical how big the difference is. When the father is the first one to discover Christ or want to go to church in the household, there's a 93% chance that the rest of the house will follow. Now, those stats, you might say those stats are weird or skewed or it's hard to measure, and you're probably right, those numbers will definitely differ a little bit. But I think that's so important to point out and remember. And just the fact that whenever the parents take charge and say, kids, we're going to church, if you don't, you're grounded or whatever, that's so important. But also noticing that there is this difference between what a mom and a father can offer in the household. It's just so true. So, the parents are so important to the youth ministry, to their kids. And I would challenge you, challenge each other to be the best youth ministry to your kids that you can be. The second one is the youth. The youth can reach the youth in a way that no one else can. This generation that we're dealing with right now of high school, middle school, and elementary are so much different from any other generation ever dealt with before. Now, that's true of every generation, but these guys also change all the time, and what was cool one week isn't cool the next. I am literally in the same generation as a lot of these kids, and they call me boomer. I don't know what it means, but it doesn't sound like a good thing. I study, I try to know the things, I try to learn the lingo and stuff, but I also draw the line at some places. I don't TikTok. I've never had Snapchat. I don't know if I'm going to get shot, but I'm not a huge fan of Beyonce. There are things that I just don't connect with the next generation on. There are things that are hard to connect with the next generation on that the youth do connect with them on. And they are in the school. They're on the team. They're on the cheerleading squad. They're in the club. There are so many places they are that adults can't be, for good reason sometimes. But the youth can minister far better than a lot of other people can in certain areas. And so train your youth not to be someone that stands by and watches the battle for the world go on. Train them to be a warrior inside of that battle, because they have an opportunity between 5 and 18 to do things that no one inside the church, no pastor on a payroll, can do. So the youth, the parents, and then I'll follow that up with everyone. Everyone should be doing youth ministry. And I know you're like, well, hold up, I don't like kids, or I don't like teenagers, which I think is a valid excuse. Listen, I don't like vegans. I will never get along with them. They are against things and want to outlaw things that are dear to my heart. I don't really care for vegans. That doesn't mean I'm not going to minister to them. That doesn't mean that I don't see it as part of my job to bring them closer to Christ, that they're not in my ministry range because I don't understand them or what they want. The same is true of the next generation. Just because you don't understand them, who they are, what they want, that doesn't mean you shouldn't be ministering to them. It is so important that you do, and here's why. I have a stat up here, and this is kind of how we see youth ministry, is one adult per 10 students. And this is kind of the Jesus model, right? You have one Jesus and 12 disciples, and Jesus ministered to those 12 disciples. And you might be like, well, if you're going on a youth trip, you at least need a 1 to 10 ratio or a 1 to 5 ratio, something like that. And this is the model that we kind of see as, well, if you're the youth leader, you know, you're in charge of that group of kids, and you should be ministering to them. And it was pointed out to me by the youth ministry professor at Johnson, this isn't how it's supposed to be. The ratio should look more like this. 10 adults ministering, mentoring, and loving on one student. That's the kind of connection that they actually need. That's the kind of connection that they actually desire. That's the kind of connection that we should actually be striving for inside of our youth ministries, inside of our churches, inside of the next generation. Because they have so many negative things going on with them. They have so many negative mentors. They have so many things that want to pull them away from Christ. that this generation needs at least 10 mentors, 10 people that want to reach that generation. 10 to 1. Which I know you're like, man, that seems like a really high number. That seems almost impossible. And I agree, it's almost impossible if we don't do this as a church. But if we strive to do this as a church, if we strive to do this with every single student, and that doesn't mean like, you know, we take a student and dump them into a group of 10 adults and they're like, okay, go. That's not what it is, but it's 10 adults being intentional about this. And so I want to go over how we can do this, how we can make sure we are intentional about this 10 to 1 ratio. And I'm just going to look at a handful of scriptures here that kind of go over what youth ministry is, how to do youth ministry. And this first one, this is good ministry for any age. This isn't just youth ministry, but it's found in John 4. It's a woman at the well, and the lesson that you learn here is meet them where they are at. Right? Jesus, like, this is like, obviously Jesus does expert level ministry. So it's not, Jesus is doing expert level ministry here with the woman at the well, but Jesus and his disciples show up at a town that they're not very well welcomed in. And Jesus tells his disciples to go off, and he sits at a well, and this woman walks up, and Jesus, you know, a minister, a Christian, you know, he knows how to minister to them, but he doesn't start off with, hey, do you know me? He doesn't start off with that line. He doesn't start off with, would you like to get to know me? He doesn't start off with that. He sees this woman approaching the well, he's at the well, and he decides to talk about the thing that they have common ground on right now. Water. And he takes a conversation about water and changes her life. He meets her where she's at. He doesn't just stay in one place and expect everyone to come to him. He goes to towns. He goes to different places. He's meeting people where they're at and has conversations with them that connect with them. He doesn't say, well, she didn't immediately go for the Bible tract, so she must not ever get to know God. Like, no, that's not how he treated it. He had a conversation. He built a real connection with her. And through that, he was able to minister to her and her whole town. A lot of times, especially with youth, they need you to meet them where they're at. You can't just drag them to where you're at with Christ. You can't just drag them to where you're at with your faith and say, well, you need to be here now. You need to like the things I like. You need to do things the way that I do things, or else you're just not going to get to know God. That doesn't work with the youth. You have to find a way to connect with them. One example I have, and I'm happy he's here today, Artie. Me and him, we have things we can connect on. Not all the time, but for instance, I have a car. Artie knows how to fix cars. Connection. Almost annually, we get together, and he saves me hundreds of dollars on things that I could probably learn to do myself. But I'm not going to, because I care about that relationship. And so Artie and me have that connection. And you can probably find ways to connect with the next generation in your way. One way I was able to do this with the kid is I have a stupid game on my phone. Some of you guys probably have stupid games on your phone. And this kid had the stupid game on his phone. And we decided to start playing it together. And that's it. That's all I have with him. But he's moved to Florida now. I don't know if he knows any other Christians. When we play that stupid game on our phone, that might be the only interaction he has with a Christian all day, all week, all month. You have to learn to meet people where they're at. You can't drag them to where you're at. You can pray and you can hope and you can introduce the gospel to them. And one day, we believe in God's grace, we believe in his power, we believe in his mercy. They're going to get there. But you have to work at it. You have to continue to go to them and meet them where they're at. The second one, and this verse is just all youth ministry. It's in Matthew 19, 13 through 15. Then people brought little children to Jesus for him to place his hands on them and pray for them. But the disciples rebuked them. Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these." Then when he had placed his hands on them, he went on from there. And this verse is all youth ministry. Jesus is telling the disciples, don't hinder the next generation from getting to know me. Don't keep it from them. Make sure that we are keeping the gospel accessible for the next generation. And that might mean every once in a while changing up how we do things here at the church. That might mean every once in a while changing up how we reach the next generation. That doesn't mean changing the message. That doesn't mean changing the meaning. As Christians, we hold true to the message. We hold true to the meaning. We might change the method. And you might raise a valid point of we should never change the method. We should always stay true to the method. You might be right. But if you truly believe that, then what are you doing inside of a church? Because Jesus didn't have a church. He walked everywhere, and he went to towns, and that's how he did church. And what are you doing with an English Bible? Why have you not learned Greek or Hebrew and learned how to read the original Bible and the original text? We are constantly changing things so that people can connect with Christ. We should never make it hard for someone to understand who Christ is. So with the next generation, we need to be striving to do that. How do we make Christ accessible for the next generation? That is a question that should always be on our minds. That might mean changing the music a little bit. That might mean changing how we do lessons, changing how we do Bible studies. Whatever it is, as long as it's effective to bringing them closer to who Christ really is, then that's the type of style that we should be striving for. There's so many great ministries out there doing that, constantly trying to match this generation and figuring out how to reach them best. And I hope that us as a church can realize we're going to have to reach that generation along with every other generation, because there's like 10 generations now or something. I don't know. There's been a lot of generations, at least. We just got to Z, so this is the last one. But we have to make sure that we're reaching all the generations. We have to make sure that it's always accessible for everyone. The next one is my favorite verse, 1 Timothy 4:12, which says, "Don't let anyone look down on you because you are young, but set an example for the believers in speech, in conduct, in love, in faith, and in purity." This is very important for the youth to know, is step up your game, right? If you're a Christian, if you're younger, step up your game. Get to know the Bible, grow in maturity, grow in faith, learn more, love more. But it also means for us as leaders, for us as adults, when they do that, don't push them back down. Let the next generation lead. Let the next generation grow. Let them fail. We need to fail. We're going to fail. So let us do it, and then let us learn from it, right? And I had so many great ministers in my life that said, "Simon, if you want to preach, go up on that stage and preach. If you want to teach, go ahead and teach. You just like Jesus says, the kingdom of heaven belongs to these. The kingdom of heaven belongs to the children. You're the next generation. You take up that mantle." We have to make sure that we are inviting the next generation to take up that mantle. The last passage I have here is the story of the prodigal son. And like the woman at the well, you can use this for anything, right? And we look at the story of the prodigal son, and we often see it as Jesus is telling people, listen, even if you're far away from God, you can come back, which is true, 100%. But this isn't necessarily the message of the prodigal son. This is the argument that Tim Keller makes in his book, Prodigal God, which is Jesus wasn't talking to a group of sinners and tax collectors when he told this story. He was talking to the priests and Pharisees. He wasn't comparing them to the prodigal son, the son who went to the father and said, "Hey, give me all my inheritance, I want to leave." And then the son did that, and he left, and he spent all the money, and he lost everything. And then he said, "Well, at least I can go back. I can probably go back to my dad, and I can work for him, and I can work to earn money. I can work to earn back his love and his approval." And so he goes back to his father, and the father sees him from a long way, and he doesn't say, "Well, he needs to work and earn it." He says, "He's coming back." And he runs and he hugs him and he throws a party for him. And that's how the father reacts when we return. He doesn't say, "You need to be perfect." He doesn't say, "You need to change what you're doing." No. The brother of the prodigal son says, "I've been working. I've been doing all these things. Why does he get the party? Why does he get the grace? Why does he get the love from the Father? I've been doing all these things." And Jesus is telling the Pharisees, Jesus is telling the priests, Jesus is telling his disciples, who are you being like? Are you being like the father, or are you being like the brother? Are you, whenever you see someone returning to Christ, celebrating that return? even though they're not perfect, even though they don't have it all together, even though the prodigal son was coming back for the wrong reasons. And the father celebrates that. He says, as long as they're returning, God is powerful enough and the gospel is powerful enough to change their heart when they get here. And the son and the brother, he doesn't like the return. And I want to tell you, don't be like the brother. Whenever someone wants to come back to God, whenever someone is thinking about coming back to church, don't say, oh, good, 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 do you want to do that? Change everything about yourself and you can get there. If they want to come back to God, say, great, let's just get you to church, let's just get you there, and then let's see what the Holy Spirit's going to do with that. And if you treat yourself that way, whenever you tell yourself, man, I'm messed up, I'm so ashamed of myself, I can never be perfect, don't let that hold you back from returning to the Father, because he's just happy when you return. He's just excited when you return. Keep letting the Holy Spirit work on you. Keep accepting the work that he wants to do to you. And so I want to invite the worship team back on stage. We have another song to do. But you'll see on your chairs an index card. And in spirit of reaching the next generation, if you don't want to write anything on your index card, get your phone out, because you can write things on there. And on that index card or on your phone, I want to encourage you right now to do a little bit of youth ministry. What I want you to do is, not yet, I want you to write down the name of someone in college, high school, or middle school that you know. Maybe someone that you don't know very well. Maybe someone that you might have never talked to but you know exists. And over this week, I want you to text them, introduce yourself to them, and ask, how can I pray for you? These college students, middle schoolers, and high schoolers are about to enter the weirdest semester they're ever going to enter. They're about to go through a lot of weird changes, a lot of hard times, despite everything that is already in the high school, despite everything that's already in the middle school, despite everything that's already in the college. They now have to deal with so many new things that none of us have ever had to deal with. And so I want you to text one of them and ask them, can I pray for you? And maybe they don't respond. Pray for them anyway. Maybe the next week you text them again. Maybe they do respond. And maybe you can start to build that 10-to-1. You can be that adult that they need. You can be that leader that they need. You can be that friend that they need this week. And if you can't do that, if you're like, man, that's just not something I can do, I want you to write something else down. I want you to write down why you can't. Maybe you don't think you know enough. Or maybe you just don't think you're loving enough, or your heart isn't in the right place. Whatever it is, I want you to write that down. I want you to really think about who can help you get there. And find that person and talk to them. Maybe you're not the person that can mentor someone, but if you're not, you need to find someone that can help you get there. You need to find someone that will help you along in your growth. I believe that if we take on the role that God has given us to go into all nations and baptize them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them everything that he commanded us, then we're going to see some powerful things happen with this next generation. But it only happens when we take that role on. To your heart, lead me to you.